Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. I can't emphasize that enough. I love to dive into the weeds and go into the rat holes, but the real problem here is the fact that that takes away from the content. And as much as I know I'm not an entertainer, I fail all the time because I keep on going down rat holes, not to try to be an entertainer, but just to try to expound upon things. And anyway, so forgive me for just kind of cutting short through the obligatories. We need to appeal to heaven, learn, pray, act. We need to focus on full compliance. I can't, in talking to people, there's nobody that will disagree with me. Nobody will argue that if every patriot that wanted to preserve liberty and get the federal government back into check. See, a lot of people have to have this epiphany. I'm in a rat hole here, but people have to have the epiphany. Is what you're getting out of government really, because bar everything other than Social Security has to go away from the federal government. It needs to focus on what it's doing. We can end Social Security and actually basically actualize it. It's a very simple process, folks, that we could actually not hurt anybody based on what's happening and how things are operating and be able to close this thing out. There's way too many people that are collecting off of Social Security that's not true Social Security. There's way too many people like that. And that Social Security was never set up to do that. But those people who are dependent on Social Security can actually plan on, you know, the government going to keep that one promise as they close it out and basically end this, because future generations cannot be strapped with that. We should never have been strapped with that. It goes to the conversation I had with my father years ago, and I just shared this yesterday with a gentleman. We were talking about, you know, the baby boomers and how we're the problems because we're the ones that, you know, raise these woke kids. Or I should say, you know, the preceding generations, that was kind of our watch. And when we look at the greatest generation, you know, I challenged my father, why are you guys the greatest generation when you guys opened the doors for communism and socialism in our government? How does that make you guys the greatest? You know, it's your fault. And he goes, you know what? You're right. And I think that, you know, the way they label things, they do that to make us feel good about, you know, about ourselves, but it really obviates the problems that we've created as a society. So anyway, we want you to start pushing for getting the Electoral College restored, and the way to do that, because I will run as a presidential candidate, but not on the tickets of the Republican or any party. I will do this. Welcome aboard, Tammy. I will do this via the true Electoral College, where we can actually get states to allow the people to properly vote for their electors per the Constitution. And we prove this. We've been going through, and actually we will be hitting this in the Virginia debates, because it comes up several times. Anyway, so we are in the Virginia debates. It's June 6th. Madison has kind of covered a variety of different topics. He's covered his encroachments, exclusive legislation, malicious stuff, jurisdiction. And we started covering, and we may have finished this, I don't think we did, but we started covering the amendments and the state structure portion. And so we're going to pick up from that again. What I want, you need to understand, because we already highlighted this with South Carolina. South Carolina went through the state structures and said, look, our states are all disheveled. You know, to try to create a national government that would fit everybody was truly a challenge. And more importantly, the way they designed the Constitution, it allowed this new general government to be able to support and interface and operate very well with all of these disheveled or these disparate forms of government being acted upon and executed at the state level. So anyway, let's go ahead and dive into this. So before we do, how are you doing?
Doing good.
Okay. All right. And so anything you want to share? There we go. she has no idea whenever I go down a path of, you know, putting the spotlight over on Tammy. She has no idea it's coming. So I apologize.
I mean, under which topic? Like,
yeah.
I can share a lot of things, but if we're staying focused on this, no.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'd like to delve into the First Amendment petition that you're working on regarding the fiasco in Wyoming on the education system. But let's kind of... we'll wait for that to start maturing where, you know, we got some maybe ink on pages and so forth, because I know everybody's busy. So we'll dive into that because, you know, Tammy is, she's not a one man show or one woman show. She is just working with a lot of great people because there's a lot of problems, even in Wyoming. You know, the adage is true. You may go look at California, look at these progressive states, and say, you know, I'm glad I don't live there. Don't, and if you say that, you are denying the fact that it's already coming and it's already forming in your state. Evil never sleeps, and all of these evil ideas are actually, when it hits your state, it'll be far more intrusive, and it'll just probably be worse. Because by that time, it'll be even far worse of other issues and so forth in the socialist states. So, folks, now it's now or never. They're not stopping, and Trump is not going to stop this. So, let's go ahead and dive into
it. It's definitely up to us. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, see, I could talk about that if you want me to, or we can wait.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and share what you want to say. I present you a piece of earth to create your own rat hole.
So, for some reason in Wyoming, it seems to me that a bunch of the superintendents around the state have gotten together and decided that they're going to exclude homeschoolers from all the sports, activities, clubs.
Uh-huh.
Except for the ones in high school that are, I can't remember the verbiage, but it's the High School Association of whatever. But unless they fall under those, and they're pretty much going to, some of them have decided they're going to exclude homeschoolers from that. Which, you know, especially in Worland, in Worland, they've always allowed homeschoolers to be a part of the things in the middle school, even in the grade school. When I homeschooled, my kids were allowed to be part of the specials in the grade school, so we homeschooled, but then they went to art, music, and PE. And then even in the middle school, when I homeschooled, my daughter was a part of the plays, and she did sports, and now for some reason they're all up in arms, and they think that the new ESA bill is somehow going to take kids away from them, and they're going to lose funding, and so it's kind of like a little war against homeschoolers here for right now. And so about a year ago, the admins, the principals, I guess, admins and principals, they got together and they decided they weren't going to allow homeschoolers to be a part of that stuff anymore. So I never experienced any of that because I wasn't homeschooling in the past year, but
okay,
I've heard a lot of horror stories. So anyways,
okay,
there was a big meeting from the board and... So
we've talked about this a little bit, and I provided you information regarding a bill of attainder, and you've looked into that. Does this qualify as a bill of attainder?
Absolutely. So when I went to the board meeting, that's what I said. I basically said, none of our feelings matter. It doesn't matter how I feel about this, how you feel about this. The admin and the school board are acting as legislators creating bills of attainder, and you don't have the authority to do it, and I would plead for you to cease and desist now, because you don't have the authority to do that, and you're violating Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution.
All right. Okay. And there we go. Good.
They don't care. it was like I wasn't even there and said nothing. They just continued on their meeting as normal and decided to create a committee to explore how homeschoolers affect public schools in Wyoming.
Okay.
At least in Washakie County.
And this is it. There you go, Washakie County. And so how is your sheriff and your county prosecutor? How are they? Are they good, constitutional, patriotic people?
I would say the prosecutor, no. I would say the sheriff likes to think that he is, but I don't know that I would say he is.
Okay. So they already cut you off on a petition, right? You basically broached, you said, I'm going to talk to you. And they said, we only got 3 minutes. You go, hold on here. This is a First Amendment petition. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And
yeah,
then
we had 3 minutes.
And then they cut you off at 5 minutes. And so.
Yeah. Okay. I pushed past it because I knew they couldn't cut me off, but.
They did. Like, yeah. Okay. Well, we can talk more about it, but my suggestion is to have a phone call. I would set up a meeting. How far is the sheriff's office away? Reasonable?
Oh, it's just here in town.
Okay. So I would call and set up an appointment to sit down and talk to the sheriff about, you know, some unlawful things that are happening, and you need to, you know, bring this to his attention. And so, you know, he'll be kind of interested. Well, why does she want to come in and meet with me? And then you can kind of lay it out and say, I'm in the process of hardcore challenging these people, and I just wanted to find out, you know, are you going to do your job? Because when somebody violates the Constitution, then they need to be held accountable. We have rights that cannot be taken. And my right of petitioning cannot be abridged, you know. And so if you want to, we can create a you know, the petition for a sheriff. But folks, when we get serious about using petitions and filing, now it's a document that actually is evidence where you can take it to the people and say, look, the sheriff's not worth reelecting because he's not going to protect us. We need somebody that's going to protect our liberties and our rights. He takes an oath and he didn't take it seriously. Give him the opportunity first to do the right thing.
So you're saying that I should go to the sheriff first and not the commissioners?
Well, so no. I would go to the sheriff while you're working. I would hit the sheriff first. Because bottom line, okay, you need to know if he's actually going to arrest your commissioners, if he's going to arrest the school board, anybody that's going to abridge your right to petition them for the redress of grievances. And you want to get him to actually say, I will support you. And you're going to say, okay, well, then I'm going to let you know when I'm going to be in the next meeting with the school board. And I would like to have a sheriff there so that when they try to shut me down again at 5 minutes, the sheriff will stand up and go, you can't shut her down. She has a right to petition you. It's a constitutional right, and you cannot abridge it. And if I don't enforce it, then I'm equally guilty as you for abridging her rights.
What about going to the sheriff about the fact that they're violating Article 1, Section 10?
So if you get them on board with arresting them for that, then you need to say, okay, and I'm petitioning them because they're violating Article 1, Section 10 by creating a bill of attainder. The problem is you're going to be dealing with a lawyer who has basically created case law precedents. You know, I'm just saying the Bar Association and so forth. 9 times out of 10, when you hit the lawyer to try to prosecute, because when you present whether that's a bill of attainder, that's the sheriff's going to give you this glazed eye look like he just ate too many donuts. I'm just, yeah. I, I, you know, I'm just being satirical or a little sarcastic. Okay, so anyway, he's just going to look at you like, what are you talking about? What's a bill of attainder? Nobody knows this stuff. And nobody knows what an ex post facto lie is. And so he'll go, okay, well, that's interesting. I need to go talk to the lawyer. So at that point, you know, they say, well, no, don't worry, because this is where you actually have to go to the commissioners, because they have the power to demand enforcement. They are your legislators, and they can actually, you know, go after this whole and wipe out that entire the staff of that school board. So anyway.
And how do they do that? What do they do?
Well, they can basically remove them for cause because they have violated the Constitution. See, when if they're under oath, if they are under oath, which most everybody in Wyoming has to raise their arm to the square, and they violated the U.S. Constitution, your commissioners have the authority under the 14th Amendment, Section 3, because clearly when they've made the determination that they are violating Article 1, Section 10 by creating a bill of attainder, they don't have the authority to, one, legislate. It's violating separations of power. And secondly, they've actually created something that is forbidden for the states to create. And ergo, they're all gone. They're removed. There you go.
So, well, interesting enough, one of the commissioners here in town, his child is one of the ones being directly affected by this. So,
okay, and
maybe, he might actually get somewhere with it.
There you go. And so all of a sudden, you know, folks, when you hear people talking about the Constitution and you hear everybody just ignoring and scoffing and, you know, so who cares? Nobody cares about the Constitution. When all of a sudden people realize that the Constitution is the solution for everybody's problem, and they start using it, and everybody actually starts standing up and supporting the Constitution, being the person that understands the Constitution is like being E.F. Hutton. Now, do you know that reference, E.F. Hutton?
So, say it again. Sorry.
E.F. Hutton. So there used to be an old commercial. It's just showing my age. I think it was maybe 60s, 70s and 80s, where they had these financial commercials about this financial group called E.F. Hutton. And so the commercial was very short. This guy was an E.F. Hutton representative, and everybody was talking. And then all of a sudden, he started talking, and everybody shut up and listened. And the little sales point was, when E.F. Hutton speaks, everybody listens.
Yeah, actually, I remember that.
Okay. So that's where, when we find people that can speak and actually and accurately articulate the Constitution, then we're creating a class of E.F. Huttons, and people are going to actually, when you start speaking, people are going to be listening.
So what do I do when I go to the sheriff and tell him that they abridged...
Well, so
they abridged me, and he's like, man, who cares?
We can talk about this online, offline. Right. I mean. But my point is that you want to start actually letting everybody know that they're now standing in water where they can look, and actually this can affect them. It could affect their ability to get reelected. Because bottom line, as you start going in and pushing the issues, next thing you know, you've got a whole, you know, tray of people that you're going to actually say, we need somebody to be our sheriff. We need, I don't know when the guy goes up for reelection, but then you know, when all of a sudden they start, you know, pussyfooting around, you know, backpedaling and everything else, then you go, okay, well, if that's what you're going to do, then why would we want to keep you in this position? This is going to be something you're going to have to defend in your next candidacy. And I don't think the people of this county wants to have a spineless, feckless sheriff. All right.
Well, that's what he ran on. He ran on the fact that he was a constitutional sheriff.
There you go. All right. And so that's something he's going to have to defend. So, all right, now we can get into content. See, folks? See? Tammy's doing a lot. You just have no idea. And she was not prepared for the spotlight. It's, and nobody is, because, you know, I really do try to focus on the content. Now, with that, and we'll keep you apprised with this movement in Wyoming. With that, Madison speaks and everybody listens when the father of the Constitution speaks. And so this is what he's talking about regarding amendments and so forth. So let's go ahead. Thank you so much.
All right. But we are flattered with the probability of obtaining previous amendments. This calls for the most serious attention of this House. If amendments are to be proposed by one state, other states have the same right and will also propose alterations. These cannot but be dissimilar and opposite in their nature. I beg leave to remark that the governments of the different states are in many respects dissimilar in their structure. Their legislative bodies are not similar, their executive are more different. In several of the states, the first magistrate is elected by the people at large, in others by joint ballot of the member of both branches of the legislature, and in others in other different manners. This right. dissimilarity has occasioned a diversity of opinion on the theory of government.
Okay, so
let me dive in.
The first magistrate is elected by the people at large. When he says the first magistrate, people think that the first magistrate is today, they think that that is a judge. The first magistrates mm-hmm. back in those days were the governors. And so because you got to remember that they didn't have the separations of power. They didn't have the three branches of government. They may have had a judiciary. So in their day, common law was where the people received justice. And nine times out of ten, the legislatures themselves were the court in determining what, you know, whether the violation and what to do about the violation. Why? Because they were still magistrate in form. In other words, wherever the power was, if it was in the hands of the governor, then the governor would make sure that the laws were being enforced because he was functioning as the first magistrate. Or if it was a legislative body, it would be the legislative, like Congress, Continental Congress, they were a legislative magistrate. So wherever the problems were being solved, and the point was that all of the states were all different. They created their own, you know, reimagining government. It was the wild, wild west, so to speak, even though it was the east. but the point is that this concept of the magistrate was going to be wiped out because the Constitution set the gold standard, and I mean this, it set the gold standard in how to have a government that is not tyrannical, where you have checks and balances as long as your public servants are honoring their oath and actually living within the boundaries of the Constitution. Again, as many of the ratification debates have already disclosed, you know, corrupt men will actually do corrupt things. They're going to violate, and we have to watch vigilantly, making sure that if they cross that line, we hold them accountable. That's simple. So, okay, I'm sorry for that. So go ahead and pick it back up with the dissimilarity.
This dissimilarity has occasioned a diversity of opinion on the theory of government, which will, without many reciprocal concessions, render a concurrence impossible. Although the appointment of an executive magistrate has not been thought destructive to the principles of democracy in many of the states, yet in the course of the debate we find objections made to the federal executive. It is urged that the president will degenerate into a tyrant. I intended, in compliance with the call of the honorable member, to explain the reasons of proposing this constitution and develop its principles, but I shall postpone my remarks till we hear the supplement which he has informed us he
right.
intends to add to what he has already said.
Okay, so unfortunately, we're going into break, so we'll be right back, folks, as we hit this promo, and I apologize, Tammy, we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I had no idea we were literally seconds away. I apologize about that, Tammy. So
that's okay.
Anyway, let's try that one more time. Go back up to the dissimilarity again, because it's worth, you know, having this all together. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, this dissimilarity has occasioned a diversity of opinion on the theory of government, which will, without many reciprocal concessions, render a concurrence impossible. Although the appointment of an executive magistrate has not been thought destructive to the principles of democracy in many of the states, yet in the course of the debate we find objections made to the federal executive. It is urged that the president will degenerate into a tyrant. I intended, in compliance with the call of the honorable member, to explain the reasons of proposing this constitution and develop its principles, but I shall postpone my remarks till we hear the supplement which he has informed us he intends to add to what he has already said.
Okay, so that's, I remember you reading that, and I think that's when we jumped down into the next one. But the point is, and why we went through this again, folks, is to help you understand the concepts of, you know, governing doctrines. This concept of magistrates was being literally blown away by the Constitution. However, it wasn't being enforced. In other words, the Constitution did not require the states to reconfigure themselves. They could be and act the way they, however they wanted to act. See my point? So let's dive into, because this is a rat hole, because we're talking today about how the states should be. So the states started reconfiguring. I should say that. When the new states started joining, they actually started adopting this concept of three branches of government. The new states didn't have to worry about reconfiguring themselves and having to, they started with the Constitutional Convention. The existing states had to actually say, what we're doing is not nearly as streamlined and not nearly as efficient and balanced as the federal government. And so they all reconfigured themselves as close as they could. Here's the question. Here's something that I will submit. I believe the reason that they didn't go verbatim to laying out the Constitution within each of the states was for two reasons, at least these two reasons. One, the majority of the people involved in the reconfiguring did not understand a representative government under sovereignty, where it was shared sovereignty with the people as well as the people's government. This is one of the huge things that was the end result of the Constitutional Convention and why the two most important issues that they debated became amendment protection clauses, the dismantling of the slave trade and getting rid of slavery in the Union, as well as securing state sovereignty that their equal suffrage in the Senate could never be taken away via an amendment. In other words, you can't change that. You cannot take away a state's suffrage. The only way you can actually get away from all of this is by going in and rewriting the Constitution completely, because those certain parts cannot be touched. And as a matter of fact, I dare not even think that the states would ever allow the giving up their suffrage. They didn't think they were giving up their suffrage with the 17th Amendment. But over time, the senators actually stopped, you know, even listening and heeding it. And I have no but, because I don't know anybody that's lived and has basically transitioned from that time to today to say, oh, well, this is the time frame when they really turned their backs on the state legislatures. But the fact is, that's exactly what happened. And the fact is, they can't do that. The fact is, they are obligated to actually vote in accordance with the state legislature. Today, with real-time governing, the state legislature has all the power to basically call up their senators and say, this is the way you're going to vote, because we're all united back here in this podunk state you think we're living in, this flyover state you ignore now. And we're telling you, if you do not vote this way, we will pull you back for treason against our Constitution and against the U.S. Constitution, and we will try you and extradite you here for the charges of a felony and violating your oath and so forth. They won't. So you don't want to go after federal treason, because who has jurisdiction over federal treason? Tammy, you got an idea? The federal government, it's right there. The federal government has first-term jurisdiction. In other words, they have original jurisdiction over treason against the U.S. Constitution. So that's why you want to make sure that you call them out for, you know, violating their oath of office, you know, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, what have you. But technically, you want to make that, and this is one of what the state legislatures have to do. They have to make violating your oath of office a felony. Because if they do that, because here's the problem. The guys in the state legislature, if they actually create a law that it's a felony if you violate your oath, guess what? They now can be charged with a felony if they do it. Oh, well, we don't want to be held accountable. See, this is why we really, this folks, we need your paradigm to shift. We have to start demanding it. You are not getting into office unless you support these very specific things, full compliance of the Constitution. And once we actually start getting rid of these people and we get, let's call them zealots, let's call them, and it's not about zealots, it's actually, you know, this, it's the recognition and the admiration for the rule of law. You know, it's not like these people are becoming tyrants. It is when the people are violating the law, that's when they're tyrants. But if we are not obligated to allow infractions to let go, to let them go, we're obligated to hold every infraction. And so it's not insensitive. You chose to violate your oath. Sorry. We literally have such a corrupt government and this corrupt paradigm that there truly is honor amongst thieves in our government.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So, okay, so let's get into the enumerated jurisdiction and confederalism that is going to be brought up in this next section. So go ahead.
Give me leave to say something of the nature of the government and to show that it is safe and just to vest it with the power of taxation. There are a number of opinions, but the principal question is whether it be a federal or consolidated government. In order to judge properly of the question before us, we must consider it minutely in its principal parts. I conceive myself that it is of a mixed nature. It is in a manner unprecedented. We cannot find one express example in the experience of the world. It stands by itself. In some respects, it is a government of federal nature. In others, it is of a consolidated nature. Even if we attend to the manner in which the Constitution is investigated, ratified, and made the act of the people of America, I can say, Notwithstanding what the honorable gentleman has alleged, that this government is not completely consolidated, nor is it entirely federal.
Okay, hold on there. So I'm going to reread a part of what you read, and I want to help people understand this. I conceive myself that it is a mixed nature. It is a manner unprecedented. We cannot find one express example in the experience of the world. There's never been a government with this design. It stands by itself. I mean, he's making these huge maxims. In some respects, it is a government of a federal nature, and in others, it is of a consolidated nature. He doesn't drill into how. A consolidated nature means that, you know, the entire government comes together and is kind of regulated by the federal government, by this general government, consolidated. In other words, a national government. We have a national defense system under this Constitution that did not exist within the Articles of Confederation. Do you understand that? So all of a sudden, when there is a need for defending ourselves and having to go to war, there is this consolidation that the entire union, and why every state is required to have a militia. That is a constitutional standing requirement to this day. And that requirement is that every U.S. citizen, and this is why it is a part of the oath of a U.S. citizen, that they must be willing to take up arms to support the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, and use deadly force if necessary. That is the obligation of every U.S. citizen, to basically abjure their responsibility or abjure any allegiance to any other potent sovereign, that the supreme law of the land is the ultimate precedence, that we must defend it. This is why, folks, Mohammedans cannot be U.S. citizens, because they will not take a stand for the Constitution when it comes to Sharia law. They are actually running an insurgency against the Constitution, which is why the fact that they're even allowing Sharia law in some of these states and in these little bastions within Pennsylvania, Michigan, and so forth, these states are actually violating the Constitution. I mean, the governor, the state legislature, they all ought to be called out. They should shut that down, and they should strip every Mohammedan that is standing up saying, we demand Sharia law, you're stripped of your citizenship. You want to push it a little further? We're going to deport you.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot rebel against our Constitution. No citizen can do that, because obviously you're not a citizen if you do. Folks, this kind of helps. You know, if you look at the relationship of being a citizen of, you know, of our Heavenly Father's kingdom, we're all a citizen of that kingdom. But you cannot be a citizen if you rebel against his laws. It's simple. And so this is how divine this Constitution is. Pick it up with. So this is where Madison actually answers. And he's talking about Henry. This is Patrick Henry that is the one that's saying, hey, this is a nationalized government. This is a consolidated. The states are being dwindled into nothing. And then he basically goes, and this was based on the concept of we the people, because this is exactly what he says right here. Who are the parties to it? The people? So go ahead and dive into that right there.
Okay.
Thanks.
Who are the parties to it? The people, but not the people as composing one great body, but the peoples as composing 13 sovereignties. Were it, as the gentleman asserts, a consolidated government, the assent of a majority of the people would be sufficient for its establishment, and as a majority have adopted it already, the remaining states would be bound by the act of the majority, even if they unanimously reprobated it. Were it such a government as it suggested, it would be now binding on the people of this state without having had the privilege of deliberating upon it. But, sir, no state is bound by it, as it is, without its own consent. Should all the states adopt it, it will be then a government established by the 13 states of America, not through the intervention of the legislatures, but by the people at large. In this particular respect, the distinction between the existing and proposed governments is very material. The existing system has been derived from the dependent derivative authority of the legislatures of the states, whereas this is derived from the superior power of the people. If we look at the manner in which alterations are to be made in it, the same idea is, in some degree, attended to.
Okay. So let me point something out here. There's a lot of things that you really want to chew on, and that I'd love to cover. But I think the one thing that's really important, because one of the things we start to see is that the federal government comes along and basically makes state legislatures make a commitment or basically subjugate themselves to the federal government. In other words, the federal government is getting the states to say, you know, they can't see the states are the parties to the compact. They can, it's like a parent cannot become their child's child. They may sign a piece of paper that says that they are, but that paper is a flagrant lie. And you can't, under the Constitution, the federal government cannot force the states to do something they don't have the power to do. And so when they started subjugating states to say, you are an inseparable part of this union, in other words, you're our child now, and we have full authority over you. And what he says here, but sir, no state is bound by it as it is without its own consent. And that consent is maintained constantly because as we look at the Declaration of Independence, it is basically our governments govern at the consent of the governed. And if we no longer like the way our government is governing, we have an inalienable right to challenge, to put off, alter, or abolish our governments. Here is the beauty. The Constitution, as long as the Constitution is being complied to, there is no problem. But now that we're basically being dragged off of the precipice into the abyss by the federal government, who's waging a plethora of different warfare tactics against the states and the people, we have a right not to basically alter it, but to hold them accountable, because within the Constitution, we actually have those tools to do that. That is the oath of office, the right of petitioning for the redress of grievances, and Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, by removing these people who are running insurgencies upon us. So we don't need to abolish these people who are calling for a biblical, these people who are telling you that this federal government is now corrupted because it's incorporated and telling you this is all legitimate. They are lying to you. This is why the patriotic movement has so many schisms in it, because everybody is they're promoting their own thing. Nobody's truly promoting the Constitution, not even the Convention of States, because the Constitution's not the problem. The only point of having a constitutional convention is if the Constitution needs to be amended, and it does not. It needs to be enforced. Every infraction, I would stand there and go toe-to-toe with any one of these people. And show me how the Constitution is the problem. Show me that the United States government has the ability to create corporations. Show me that they have the ability to subjugate us to a foreign corporation or a foreign entity like the UN. Show me in the Constitution that the federal government has the authority to basically spend money on things that they don't have the authority to even do. The whole point is they're doing things, they're infractions. The infractions against the Constitution is so large It is so immense that we have to do something, folks. We are literally on borrowed time. It's not borrowed time because of a loan. It's on borrowed time because as long as everybody is glazed eyes and duped by going, oh, this is all legitimate, this is all legitimate. And when the patriotic movement is out there telling you it's legitimate and you got to go, you got to become a sovereign citizen so you don't pay taxes, you're going to get sucked up into it. We're all getting sucked up into it. The only way we get out of this is we have to stand on the Constitution. We have to unite and demand full compliance and get rid of all of these people who are literally running their insurgencies as they're sitting in offices under a legal obligation to support the Constitution, and they're not fulfilling it or not even taking that obligation, because we've found that there are people that are not even taking the oath. And that's because we're not holding them accountable. You want to know whose fault it is? It's not Pelosi's fault. It's not Biden's fault. Yeah, they're tyrants and they're getting away with it. As long as you let them get away with it, it's your fault. Are you going to be a part of the solution or are you going to continue to be a part of the problem? It's that simple. Sorry, but let's move on into the gray area now.
Okay. By the new system, a majority of the states cannot introduce amendments, nor are all the states required for that purpose. Three-fourths of them must concur in alterations. In this, there is a departure from the federal idea. The members to the National House of Representatives are to be chosen by the people at large in proportion to the numbers in the respective districts. When we come to the Senate, its members are elected by the states in their equal and political capacity. But had the government been completely consolidated, Senate would have been chosen by the people in their individual capacity in the same manner as the members of the other house. Thus, it is of a complicated nature, and this complication, I trust, will be found to exclude the evils of absolute consolidation as well as of a mere confederacy.
Okay, so the complicated nature he's talking about, as far as I see this, is really this concept of sovereignty representation, that the representatives of the bicameral legislative bodies who have unique roles and responsibilities to serve their constituents. Do the counties really care about war? No, they care about, you know, the roads. They care because that's their job. It's the federal government's job to worry about war and the people's job to make sure that they don't get us in because of, you know, their agenda or anything else. It better be a legitimate reason for war. And this is one of the reasons why they snow job us in dragging us into war. Interestingly enough, we have actually seen how the evidence shows one thing and then all of a sudden. And I believe that we've been set up in so many times where we've gotten accurate information and then they actually provide false information about, and I'll go into, you know, the original Desert Storm. Did Saddam Hussein have chemical weapons? Yes, he did. Did Saddam Hussein, was he seeking nuclear and other formidable mass weapons of mass destruction? He had chemical weapons. And as a matter of fact, nobody even denies that other than the fact that, oh, well, everybody says the intelligence was wrong. Well, hold on here. We actually had boots on the ground where they were finding mustard gas in artillery rounds. Tammy, is that a chemical weapon, mustard gas?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So how is it that they didn't have them? And how is it that we feel like we've been lied to? But I'm telling you, they want you to feel like you've been lied to so that you distrust the conservative government, that, you know, the regime that was in at that time, so that it helps justify the need for a more liberal global government. But if you look, even Obama was equal in doing, you know, manipulations of, you know, foreign entities and so forth. It's been a globalist agenda, and they literally use these different sides as like Mutton Jeff or, you know, good cop, bad cop to get the same means out of us. This is one of, you know, if you, there's a really good book, The Dark Majestic, that's written by, I think, Tex Mars. He actually exposes how George H.W. Bush was, you know, just a very corrupt individual. And I don't know if there is a good documentary, but there are documents that you can put together where George H.W. Bush looked at Bill Clinton as it was more of a son than W. Bush was. And as a matter of fact, he loved what Clinton was doing, and he set Clinton up with the, you know, the Agenda 21 and the UN issues, these UN agendas that he knew he couldn't get through, which is why they did everything they could to help Clinton get elected. Nobody tells you this, but why is it that George H.W. Bush got on a train for that presidential election, rode through a few states, and that was it? He didn't even campaign. And they finally had to bring Perot in because the nation was pretty happy with the way things we were doing and everything else. They didn't see a reason why to, you know, go into this slick Willie, to buy into this guy. And the reality is they had to bring Perot in to take more votes away from Bush because Clinton only got 39% of the popular vote. Why is it nobody tells you this? The second election, they had to bring him back. They had to bring Perot back again because Clinton could only muster 42%. 39% and 42%. But that was a mandate? We've been played. We're constantly being played. I apologize for diving down this rat hole, but the point is...
That's the hard part. We don't know when we're not being played.
That's right. So we literally cannot... You know, look anywhere. We can't look to the parties. We can't look to the court. We can look at the Constitution, and we can use it as our weapon as well as our defense. We can defend ourselves from tyranny with it, and we can go after the tyrants with it. The Constitution is the way, full compliance of the Constitution is the way out of this mess. And until you demand it, folks, we're going to continue riding the wave into destruction. That's why I say it's now or never. Now, we're going to dive into money next because the ratification debates really dives into the importance of why we're supposed to have gold and silver coin. And I believe that every president that has been involved in the duping, going back to before the Federal Reserve, going back to Ulysses S. Grant, there's people that want their justice. They want justice for these violations of what these men did. You know, then I say, go dig them up and burn them in effigy, all of them, if that makes you feel better. But we need to get back to the standards, and we actually need to go after those nations that these men cooperated with in giving them our gold and so forth. They had no business doing what they did. Anyway, so we'll have you back tomorrow, or actually tomorrow, because it's Tuesday. So we'll have you back tomorrow, Tammy, and we'll dive more into the Virginia ratification debates. These things are so, they're so exposing of the truth that it just fires me up. I just love the Virginia debates. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.